Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, July 26, 2013, and I am your host, Jenny Rempel. Today I'm joined in studio by Allison Cole.
Hello.
And Cynthia.
Hello.
And Tim, Alyssa, and Jackie are away today. Welcome. Today's show, I'm really excited to be back on the air here in Vancouver discussing my recent three-month internship in New York City with Mercy for Animals. I'm going to share some interviews with you guys that I did while I was on the road. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and bringing you both interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We encourage the movement towards a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy, and afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at cooperadio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. On today's show, I'm going to share two interviews with you that I did while I was on the road. The first is with a great activist from New York City called Nancy Kogel. She is the host of a great radio program called Roar, that's Reaching Out for Animal Rights, which started out as a radio show and has now become a television program on the community radio or the community television station in New York City. She started out as an activist and a social justice advocate before focusing on animal rights as her main thing. So that was pretty cool. I got to speak with her at the Animal Rights Conference that we reviewed last week on the show, so you can check out that podcast available on our website, animalvoices.org, to hear more about the Animal Rights Conference. But I'll be bringing you that interview with Nancy, and we'll get to hear how you can start your own television program. Also, to close the show, you'll hear my interview with Victoria Moran, the author of Main Street Vegan, Everything You Need to Know to Eat Healthfully and Live Compassionately in the Real World. Victoria will be talking with us about her book and other projects related to Main Street Vegan, and sharing her tips for going vegan and encouraging others to do the same. We're even giving away a free copy of the book, so stay tuned to find out how you can win a copy of Main Street Vegan by Victoria Moran. So, Cynthia, I hear you have some news for us.
I went with a couple of the other Animal Voices crew to Saints Animal Sanctuary this weekend on Saturday. So it was Alyssa, Tim, Jackie, and our friend Ashley. So we got a moto van, we rented a van, and we got into the van and we went over to Mission. So for those who don't know where Mission is, it's about an hour away from Vancouver, and it's the Saint Sanctuary. So it's an senior animal in need today society. So it's for end of life care for animals. So they're seniors.
Yeah, we have had them on our show before, actually earlier this year. So if people want to find out more about them, look up Saints on our website, animalvoices.org, and you can listen to a wonderful interview that we did with them earlier this year.
Awesome. And yeah, and so you can actually go and tour like we did. So they have tours on Saturday and Sunday at 11 a.m. and you can just show up. You have to be there on time, and they take you through this tour that we went on, which is about an hour and a half. And it was super fun, really interesting. I didn't realize they had so many animals on that space. Just to give you an idea, they have 31 dogs, 33 cats, 7 rabbits, 2 sheep, 4 horses, 7 chickens, 1 turkey, 3 ducks, 1 dove, 2 budgies, 3 potbelly pigs, 4 farm pigs, 1 Jersey, 1 Holstein, 3 goats, and a llama. The llama was kind of my favorite because the llama protects these 2 sheep. Anytime you go near the sheep, the llama was like hiding behind the fence, like peering at us to make sure we didn't go near his sheep. They were like
so
his
sweet.
Sheep. It was super cute.
See, animals are possessive too.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. The bonding that just occurs between animals and of difference between different species as well, which I don't think is really a big deal in the animal world, but to us, it's like, wow, look, a llama and a sheep. They're different, but they like each other. And, you know,
animals have friends too.
Yeah. It was amazing. And like I was saying, a lot of the animals are older, except for there's a little family of pigs. So the mom came, this lady pig came pregnant. And so they let her have her piglet. And so they live, she's now spayed or whatever it's called when they...
I think it's called spayed.
Okay, spayed. And so the mom, dad, and the little baby pig live together. And so the little baby's the only one that's not a senior there, but he was so cute.
You're telling me there was a baby pig there?
Yeah.
And I didn't get to see it.
I think he's about a year. He's so cute. So I put my little finger through the fence and he was like sniffing with his snout, sniffing. And then all of a sudden he looked at me, I looked at him, and I was like, what are you gonna do? And he just went for it. And he took a little nibble of my finger, but just like
that
a puppy nibble.
So cute.
It was the cutest thing. And I'm like, I just got bit by a pig.
That is awesome.
How
Cynthia.
Awesome is that? Yeah.
May I live vicariously through your experience.
So cute. And it was like, it was just like when a puppy bites you, just that kind of curious like nibble of like, what is
What's this?
Yeah,
is
exactly.
It tasty?
Pig bite.
Yeah,
do you need
bite.
Like a rabies shot after that?
I think I'm okay. Yeah, you didn't break any skin. But yeah, there was amazing. There's like I said, the farm animal. And then the cats and dogs and rabbits. And I think one of my favorite parts was just seeing the different types of animals. A lot of the animals they have actually are special needs. So there was some animal, there was this one dog and he only walked with his front two legs and he was older and he was just so cute and he wanted to play fetch. So I played fetch with him and I've never played fetch with a two-legged senior dog. So
wow, I've never seen
awesome.
A two-legged dog before.
Yeah, so many experiences. I recommend people to go check it out.
One of the best ways to help animals is by eating compassionately. So Allison is going to give us a review of a new vegan restaurant.
Nice segue.
Good
Thank
segue.
You for that. Yeah, I want to talk about Gray's Restaurant. It's the newest vegan restaurant here in Vancouver, having opened just this past May. And I've been there twice now, once in June and most recently just last week. So I thought I'd give a review about my thoughts about it. Now, Vancouver has a handful of vegan restaurants and a much lengthier selection of vegetarian restaurants, but we've never had any vegan restaurants before that qualify in the fine dining category, and now we finally do in Gray's Food and Drink Restaurant. It's located on Fraser Street and 23rd Avenue, and it's there to fill that much needed niche. So how does it fare in vegan fine dining and just in general food offerings overall? Well, I definitely have some opinions about that, but first I wanted to talk a bit about what Gray's is all about. What I appreciate about this restaurant is that not only do they hold up to the ethic of being 100% plant-based, but they also hold up to the value of sustainability in general. And when you go into the restaurant, and both of you have been there, right?
Yeah.
So you probably have noticed all the furniture is recycled, and they talk about that, I think, like on their Facebook and that, which is really interesting. Their chairs are reupholstered with
burlap.
Yes. Cynthia's like blank
stare. I
lost
that one, sorry.
and then another thing, I don't know if you can think of any other ones, but another thing I've noticed is they use mason jars to serve their food in. They put their candles in them too. So it's just a really good use of reusing already existing resources that have, you know, that they've taken the time to discover and transform. Most businesses don't think of doing that probably. They also grow their own vegetables, make use of composting and solar heat, their hot water. So, you know, it's a business that cares about ethics. And I think this is something valuable to support, especially locally in our own community, where you can go to visit a business out of many, which is actually going the extra mile to provide a needed service to its people with taking great care of the footprint that they are leaving in doing so. Also, their wines and beers are fully vegan, and the restaurant also uses as many local and organic ingredients as possible. Now, Gray's strives to cater to a wide audience, providing food that will please the palate from omnivore to vegan, and I can see that its focus in food is to use fresh plant ingredients to produce enticing flavors and displays with a creative spin on it. And you're not going to be finding any Gardein chicken patties here. It's just really all about the plants, like the plants in their original form. I feel that they genuinely are trying here to present an image and build a reputation of a high-quality restaurant serving high-class food to its customers, and I do commend them for that. But does the actual food itself measure up to all the preceding grandeur? So the menu options are, they're divided into four different categories. They've got small plates, grazing boards, large plates, and dessert. The first time I went with my dad and my sister, and we first shared the sliders from the grazing board category, and this consisted of three little mini burgers, aka sliders, with mini patties inside, entitled Tuscan White Bean, North American Yam and Peanut, and Chilean Spicy Black Bean. I have to say that my dad really enjoyed these, but I found the patties to be quite dry. It was $9 for these three tiny little mini burgers, so you can take away from that what you wish. But on to a really great thing that I had at that meal. I had the pierogies the first time I went there, and I had heard already, like, that this is the place to go for pierogies. They're whole wheat, they're handmade, they're filled with yam and eggplant, adorned with sautéed oyster mushrooms, crispy shallots, pickled beet shred, crispy smoky eggplant and mushroom strips, smoky coconut cheddar sauce, which I really enjoyed, sour coconut cream, spicy tomato jam. I thought those were really good. And lastly, I just want to really briefly mention the dessert. I've had two desserts there. I love dessert, vegan desserts. First time I had the rhubarb crumble with the white chocolate ganache for $7. I thought that was a decent price for what you got. It was really tasty. And a brand new item on their menu is their ice cream sandwich, which for some reason, I just checked yesterday, it's listed as being $8 online. They charged us $9 for it. I thought it was really, really small and not that overly impressive for $9. So there you go. What have your experiences been at Gray's with regards to the food?
I, too, was really impressed by the desserts. I was there for brunch, so we had kind of their...
Yes, they serve brunch.
Yeah, their, like, French toast-style item, and it had a really great sauce on it, really sweet and delicious. I found their... I had the seitan waffle sandwich. The waffles were great, but the seitan I was a little disappointed with, very dry. So I think not so much on the meat substitutes, but more on the sweet things.
Yeah, I loved my dessert. I had a carrot cake.
The French toast,
French toast carrot cake.
I've heard that's great.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. And it had this ice cream, vegan ice cream. It was delicious. And then I also had the crumble as well, and the vanilla cream in the crumble was just amazing. I had the pierogies as well, and I think they're gluten-free, actually. I think it's not whole wheat, but
they have a lot of gluten-free options there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. My mistake. I think you're right on that. Yeah. So
for gluten-free, they were delicious.
Yeah. So just to conclude, I just want to say that, you know, I enjoyed trying out the new culinary experiences that Gray's has to offer to the Vancouver vegan scene, but I definitely don't want to be going there too often. It's going to break my wallet. I paid $24 for like a smallish salad and that ice cream sandwich with tax and tip. That's kind of a lot, huh? You can't be spending that all the time. So I would definitely be, you know, equally or more satisfied just with the food itself by eating at a much cheaper venue in Vancouver. But I would like to keep going to Gray's as much as I can just to try out everything there, you know, in moderation. It's located at 3980 Fraser Street in Vancouver, and it can be found online at graysrestaurant.ca.
Drishti Point is a radio program featuring interviews about yoga, spirituality, and wellness. Our guests include yogis, authors, musicians, healers, and renowned spiritual teachers. Tune in Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. for your weekly dose of yoga wisdom and inspiration.
Hi, you're listening to the Animal Voices show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And I just wanted to mention, actually, we went to the Saints Sanctuary, and the photos are on Facebook, so you can check them out and see the little pig who bit
awesome
my finger.
Awesome photos. We've got lots of events coming up this weekend and next weekend in Vancouver and abroad, too. So it's VegFest Vancouver tomorrow, Saturday, July the 27th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. We're going to be there. I'm looking forward to that. Jenny, you're going to be there with your love club, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, your university group. And
I'll be speaking, too, at 3 p.m.
Yeah, cool. I think we're going to be speaking, too, for Animal Voices at 11 a.m. and 3 o'clock p.m. So this is happening. It's an annual event. This is the third one. Happening on Granville Street between Dunsmuir and Smythe in downtown Vancouver. It's a street festival, a summer street festival. There's going to be tons of people there. I know there was last year. And the festival is going to be featuring vegan food vendors, tables for animal protection organizations. We're going to be there with a table. There's going to be local businesses there, speakers on the stage, and more. And we'll please come by and say hi to us there. I look forward to meeting people there. And for more information on VegFest, you can visit VegFestVancouver.com, which is it's going to be a beautiful day out tomorrow. I know that for sure. I hope you can all make it. Also tomorrow, this is happening during VegFest from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Perhaps you can take a little break out of your day to attend this. It's a really important demo that's happening. It's the International Empty the Tanks Protest Day, and this is happening locally. It's happening all over the world, but locally it's happening at the Vancouver Aquarium at Stanley Park. This will be the first ever International Empty the Tanks Protest. On this day, people who care about animals will be globally coming together as one body to stand up against the global industry that fuels and the cruel capture and containment of whales and dolphins and tanks. So please do join your fellow animal advocates there tomorrow, and let the Vancouver Aquarium and all other captive facilities know that we will not stop being a voice for these precious creatures who have lost their right to freedom, their right to a natural life, and are now imprisoned, artificially inseminated, and forced to perform tricks for food, all for human entertainment and profit. They'll be meeting outside at 11 a.m. outside the aquarium, and if you don't live in Vancouver, you can find out about all other demos that are taking place in all other parts of the world, such as Marineland in Ontario, SeaWorld San Diego, SeaWorld San Antonio, even the Netherlands, South Africa, Hong Kong. They're everywhere. Go to EmptyTheTanksWorldwide.com for all the info there. Moving on, I wanted to talk about another event that's happening tomorrow on, it's so perfect, it's happening on VegFest Vancouver Day, and I told Nadia, the organizer, that this morning, she reminded me of this, and I actually shared a video about Animal Freedom Day on our Animal Voices Vancouver Facebook page this morning, so if you want to go there just to see what it's all about, or you can listen to me here too. So tomorrow's Animal Freedom Day. If you've known, if you're a long-time listener to the show, we did an interview with Nadia Masoudi a few years ago about the first ever one, which was 3 years ago, and this is her endeavor to, basically her end goal is to have people animal free from their diets for all the time. Like, so it starts with one day though. Animal Freedom Day, it's a global annual event. It aims to raise the awareness against the environmental crisis, human health, the hunger, famine, and animal welfare. It's a day in which people from all walks of life cease to consume animal products. So each consecutive year of Animal Freedom Day, an extra day is added where individuals are encouraged to go animal-free. So this year, oh, it's the fourth year this year. I didn't realize it had been that long. So they encourage everyone to try going animal-free actually this year for 4 days. You can go to their Facebook page to find out more. So you just go to Facebook and look up Animal Freedom Day. They have a Facebook page there, the events there, and there's lots of stuff happening. Go animal-free for 1 day, 4 days, or more days. If you have an event that you would like to have announced on the show, please email it to radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver.
So yeah, Jenny, tell us about your lovely trip to New York and about your internship and food and everything. I just want to hear as much as possible.
Well, I would love to just hear the sound of my own voice and talk a lot, but hopefully I'll be able to answer some questions that people have too. Basically, I just went to New York City for 3 months to do an internship with Mercy for Animals. They're a really great animal rights organization, and they do undercover investigations into factory farms and then share that information with the public and also pursue legal justice for animals. So I was really excited to work with them because I'd done an event at my school before called Pay-Per-View, which is where you download a 4-minute video that's available free online, and then you offer to pay people $1 to watch the video. So at my school, we used money from our club budget, but they also recommend you can get money from places like Veg Fund, which gives money to activists who want to do efforts like this to raise awareness about the plight of animals. So I'd done that event and found it really successful at getting people to go vegan and really consider these issues and think about them in a very direct way, because I think if more people knew what was happening to animals, then they wouldn't want to support the industries that exploit them. So that was why I went there, and I got to live in an apartment with other people from Mercy for Animals while I was in New York, and I also got a transit pass, so I got to do lots of exploring in the city, going to lots of fun places. Some of my favorite places to go were this one restaurant called Champs, which was in Brooklyn. It's my favorite vegan place there. It's kind of similar.
My friend Evan, I think, works there.
Oh,
vegan baker, vegan baker from Vancouver who moved there and went to work at Champs. I think he's still working there.
That's awesome. I actually met a vegan baker while I was there also. She works at Peace Food Cafe, which was one of my other favorite spots. They were the first people that I know of to make what's called a vegan, I think they're calling it a dosant. Basically in New York, there's a thing called a cronut. It's a combination of a croissant and a donut. It's really popular. Like, people wait in line, they go on Craigslist, get other people to buy them.
Yeah,
for them.
They pay people $100 to get their spot in line for the cronuts.
But you can get a vegan one, and you can just call in and they will save one for you and put your name on it. They're really nice. So I met this vegan baker who works at Peace Food actually at the Veggie Prom. So here in Vancouver, we have the Vegan Prom. In New York, they have the Veggie Prom. Very similar style of events. I actually like the one here a lot better, not to compare, not that it's a
contest.
Yay,
Vancouver!
But,
so much better than New York, and one aspect at least.
Yeah, I just found the one here was a lot bigger, and like the decorations were like more in detail and in depth. But also in New York, not only was it much smaller, but it was also like kind kind of like the food and stuff was gone very quickly. So the event sort of kind of wrapped up earlier in the evening. But they did do some fun American traditions. There was like a vegan prom king and prom queen, which was kind of fun. And you got to vote on who you wanted to win.
I want to do that at our vegan prom. I was thinking about that.
I think it would be a lot of fun. And there was a best dressed contest too that was judged by Leanne from Vogue Couture.
We should do that at ours too.
Yeah. Mm. Actually, another place I really liked to go in New York was Vogue Couture. It's a vegan fashion store. The designer, Leanne, does completely vegan products and does runway shows and everything. So she's really bringing veganism to the fashion world. So I think that's really awesome.
I've been learning a lot about her this year. She just seems like an amazing person. We should actually have her on the show because she's completely motivated by animals.
Yeah, and she makes coats, which are great for winter and summer, you know, fancy nights. So that was a lot of fun. I also got to see a lot of these cool people at The Seed, which was a 3-day event that I went to, or 2-day event. It was like a weekend kind of conference, sort of trade show deal, and I got to take pictures there, so I got to meet a lot of interesting people. And outside, parked was another one of my favorite spots to go, the Cinnamon Snail.
Cinnamon Snail.
It's a vegan food truck based out of New Jersey, but they park in New York.
Salivating.
Yeah, it's really good. And if you go there at the end of the day, they'll usually give you a lot of their like donuts and extra baked goods for pretty cheap. So
they gave me some for free. They ran across the street, saw me holding a box from earlier in the day and said, here, have some free donuts. They're so nice.
That's awesome. I found, too, I got a lot of free stuff when I wore my MFA shirt or people that knew I was interning. Like, I had to go on errands sometimes and people were really
fellow
nice.
Vegans?
And, vegan businesses and communities
that's
supporting
super
the vegan.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So what did you do for MFA exactly?
I actually went in just being a general intern, and I was doing like internal more office stuff. The New York interns more do internal things, but I got to switch and start working on more graphic design based things because that's where my skills lie. So they were really great at utilizing my skills. I worked on the website chooseveg.com and got to make some pages and design some things for
awesome.
That. And I also worked on some of their like pride flags and made signs for them and did some work on brochures as well. So it was really, really great to get to use my skills to help animals. And then we also did some tabling and outreach. I think my favorite moment was I was at a fair one day on the street, and then this man came by who was an older man and started talking with us, and he really got it. Like he wasn't vegan, and I'm not sure if he even switched his diet afterwards, but he said like, clearly this is important if you young people are here devoting your lives to this. And he understood that if someone was willing to go through that extreme, then it must be an important issue. He took some literature.
It's interesting to see that perspective from a different lens, because we're in it and then you see someone who's outside of it and but just logically thinking. That's just really powerful.
Yeah, that was a really touching moment for me. And we made a vegan too for sure one day, so that was fun. A lot of these events people on the spot
constructed a vegan.
Yeah. He called his friend and he was like, yo man, like you gotta know about this, like there's a problem happening, I've gotta do something. It was
this is
cool.
Just amazing. This movement's just growing more and more. It's because of people like you, Jenny.
Thank you
so much, Jenny. That's awesome.
Actually, not just people like me, there's a lot of other people in the world that are helping animals too, one of which I got to speak with recently, Nancy Kogel from ROAR, that's Reaching Out for Animal Rights. She talked with me at the Animal Rights Conference about her work doing both social justice advocacy and advocating for animals. So she has a television program that she started, which talks about animal rights. And she also does like subway outreach and outreach like on the streets in New York. So it was really interesting to speak with her about her thoughts. Let's hear from her now.
And so how did your program get started?
Well, actually, originally we were on the radio. We were on a listener-sponsored nonprofit radio station called WBAI, and it's a progressive news talk radio show with culture and music, and we thought there should be a show about animals and animal rights and veganism and vegan outreach, and so a few of us got together and we made a radio show, and we interviewed Carol J. Adams for 1 hour and Charles Patterson, who wrote Eternal Treblinka, Treatment of Animals in the Holocaust, and of course Carol J. Adams, who wrote The Sexual Politics of Meat and also The Pornography of Meat and several other wonderful books. And the last one we interviewed was Rin Berry, who wrote Food for the Gods, Vegetarianism and the World's Religions. And after doing that, somebody invited me to go and see about, a friend of mine wanted to do television. And actually, the public access TV offers free classes and, you know, free getting on the air and free camera work if you want to. And so I just accompanied this friend of mine, and it turned out that he decided not to do it, and I decided to do it. And so I went full steam ahead and just started producing a weekly TV show.
That's wonderful. It's funny how life works out that way.
Really? Yeah. I was like, no, I'll just support him, you know. And
now it's your baby.
Now it's my baby. It started out going to a park and just interviewing anybody in the park. Well, what do you think about eating a plant-based diet and lifestyle? And we'd get kind of very negative responses. And then we thought it would probably be best. And then it felt like too forced, you know, to try to get them to see on a TV show. So we started interviewing vegans. And then we started interviewing vegans who were part of organizations. And then we started going to events, for example, lectures at NYU. We added to that, we started getting shows from films from the different groups. For example, Foul Play by Mercy for Animals. And so we would cut that up into like segments of half an hour segments, because that's really what the people who made them wanted. And it's been very successful. We get comments from people on the street, oh, you're the one who made that. I watch your show.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I really learned. People have come up and said, like, you really saved my life. My family was getting sicker and sicker, and now we're completely healthy from going to a plant-based diet and lifestyle. See, I go through New York City subway system, and I do street theater, which really is subway theater.
Oh, wow.
And I go from car to car and hand out leaflets, and at the same time do a very dramatic presentation of the importance of eating a plant-based diet. We mentioned that 60,000 people die of starvation or hunger-related diseases every day because most of the plants on this planet go to feed the animals that then go to feed just a small number of people. And lastly, we say that the meat, dairy, and egg industry injures and kills more workers and exploits black, female, and immigrant labor more than any other industries. And so one of our TV shows, a friend of mine came along and videotaped the whole going from car to car and how I do it down the street, and I sing songs and hand out leaflets down the street, and he videotaped that, so somebody recognized that show.
Oh, that's cool. It's nice you're able to integrate both of your forms of activism together like that.
Exactly, yeah, right. So people can see that they can do it themselves, you know,
that's
anywhere.
That's actually quite interesting about the subway promotion. So what kinds of responses have you had to that?
It's pretty amazing. You know, like there'll be, like people will look up at first kind of like shocked because I'm not asking for money. I'm asking to pay attention and take a leaflet. That's it. And on the whole, people don't mind. Like they'll either go back to reading a newspaper, close their eyes, or they'll listen, and you just do reach a tremendous number of people. Whenever I'm going on the subway, no matter where I'm going, that's when I do my leafleting. So I don't take my time out from what I'm doing in my editing or the t-shirts or, you know, building a website or communicating with volunteers or things like that. I'll just do it when I'm going someplace, like if there's a meetup or an event, or I have to go shopping for food downtown or something, or have an appointment, I will just do it, you know, the 5, 6, or 7 cars that I'm doing it, or on the subway platform, or walking down the street, so wherever I am.
That's awesome. Have you ever encountered any trouble? I know our system in Vancouver is a little bit different than New York City. Solicitation isn't quite as widespread as it is in New York. So have you ever had any problems with like security?
If I see a police officer while I'm on the train, I'll go up right afterwards and I'll say, oh, do you have children? This is very important for their health. And, you know, you might want to take a leaflet for yourself or just remember this website. And they pay it no mind now. It's sort of like seen as kind of like, ha ha ha, harmless, you know. But I know it's affected a lot of people and turned people around.
That's wonderful.
I actually am still involved in all the social justice activism that I've always been involved in, really, because what I see in my experiences of the last, let's say, 40 years of my 65 years on the planet, is that these social justice issues are so interlocked. Like, I see racism, sexism, ageism, speciesism, able-bodiedism, hetero, they're all interlocking oppressions, basically, and they all augment capital's domination over all of us. They're all connected, and they reinforce each other, that kind of othering, thinking that another being is there for my pleasure or profit. And capital, the domination of wealth and corporate conglomerates, benefit from keeping people divided from each other, or thinking that women are here to be used by men, or animals by humans, or people of color, or poor people on welfare, immigrants. These issues are so interrelated. So I'm actually really the devil's advocate in a lot of situations that I'm in. So I really urge animal rights and vegan outreach activists to stay involved and get and keep involved. And I urge people who are involved in social activism, social justice issues, to extend it to all species and, you know, help save the planet at the same time, and your health and the animals and workers and starving people, you know. So, yeah, I'm very involved in everything. But I actually focus on animal rights because I think it's so central. It's the largest industry in all of the world right now. You know, one third of all petroleum goes to this industry. It's the number one cause of global warming, deforestation, soil erosion, pollution, you know, misuse of resources. And I see it also as the beginning of capitalism. You know, I see it as like wealth being movable wealth, not land. Movable wealth was non-human animals, cattle measured per capita by the head. And that's capitalism. That's how it started. Wealth became accumulated because the animals were bred and reproduced, and then people would own more of them, and then were forced to go to war for more cattle and more land. Socrates talked about that. You know, won't we have need of more land, and won't our neighbor have need of land, and won't we go to war with each other? Yes, yes, yes. And then the idea of enslaving other people, because the animals were enslaved, let's do it with other people. Let's use their labor. And then patriarchy, you know, controlling women's reproductive rights so that wealth could be passed on to the next generation of men, males. So I see it as very central in a lot of ways. And it's so ever-present. I mean, what we're eating, what we're wearing is something we can decide every day for ourselves. So, you know, I think making the links and networking is essential for our movements as a whole, and to join together and to form a mighty movement, a united front, really, of people wanting to build a better world, one where we share the whole planet. We share the joy of caring, being guardians of non-human animals together.
That's kind of what we're doing right now.
That's right, exactly.
Well, this is really great. Thank you so much for connecting Vancouver with this information, and we look forward to seeing and hearing more from you in the future.
It's wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
That was my interview with Nancy Kogel of Roar, Reaching Out for Animal Rights, a television program based in New York City. I actually met Nancy at a vegan poetry reading from a vegan poem book that was being released, and then I planned to do an interview with her, and then saw her again at another vegan event, and I finally connected with her at the Animal Rights Conference. So I think you could hear the hustle and bustle of all the activists in the background, but it was really great to get to speak with her and hear her really profound thoughts on some topics relating to animals. I think she's a really great activist, and I'm glad we got the chance to profile her.
Awesome. You are listening to Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And so now into some news. In Canada, the military uses thousands of live animals every year for training and testing. A new study came out in the Journal of Military Medicine, and it revealed that Canada was one of only six NATO countries still using live mice, ferrets, and pigs for military purposes. It came out that the National Defense uses about 2,900 live animals each year for research, and an undisclosed number of additional animals for training battlefield doctors in how to treat gunshot wounds, blast injuries, and other trauma. And a man named Justin Goodman, a sociologist from Virginia Marymount University, stated that use of simulations is superior to the use of animals, and that these aren't necessary. I was at the animal advocacy camp, and there was Mercy for Animals had, and I can't remember his name now.
He wasn't from Mercy for Animals. He was from another organization. Okay. And
SETFA.
Yeah, from yes. SETFA. Right. And he was speaking about the use of animals, mainly in education, but also for testing and other military training purposes.
Yeah, and he showed the simulations and how they're actually superior because they use human simulations as opposed to animals who don't often look like us.
Yeah, you're saying that someone who's using the simulation is saying it's superior.
Yeah, superior.
But in that story, there was a quote from, I guess it was from the Canadian military, saying, well, this would really put harm to our soldiers if we weren't able to use animals.
Exactly.
So I just don't get that.
Yeah, so they said that, but then there's all these countries that don't use them. There's only six
right.
that do, and there's 22 that don't, and they're fine. So it's just U.S., Norway, Denmark, Poland, and Britain who still use them. And so, yeah, it's kind of the back and forth of no, we're right, no, you're right type thing.
It's getting to be a very archaic practice, and I think they need to move with the times.
Yeah, shooting, stabbing, and mutilating animals, it just is horrible. So hopefully now that this is in the news, it can be talked about and something can be done about it, and we can join the other countries who are not using animals for testing and training purposes. And then on to some lighter news, well, maybe lighter, in Paris, the Cat Cafe. So an animal rights group is slamming a new Paris Cat Cafe plan. So I don't know if you've ever heard of a cat cafe. I hadn't till this morning. But
yes, it's a big thing in Japan, apparently.
Yeah, Katy Perry went to one.
And it's what it sounds like.
Yeah, and so exactly. So it's a cafe with cats. And so the one in France, she just wants to have cats around while you have coffee and tea, and you can pet the kitties that are around. Well, I found out in Japan, you actually book a certain cat that you want, which reminds me a bit of either prostitution or escort services.
Yeah, escort service.
It's a little insane. So basically, animal rights activist against it is saying that these animals are being reduced to teddy bears since they're kind of promoting it as petting these animals. And yeah, it's just an interesting thing. I didn't even know that this goes on. And I'm not too sure if these are rescues or these are just cats they breed for these cat cafes. But
I think it's a bit of a complicated issue. You have to, there's different facets to sort of examine here. First of all, you said for you, are they rescues is a question that comes up in your mind. So if they're rescues, would that be okay then? Because it's either this, the cats are serving these people, or they're dead. Which is better, right? And to me, it's more of a matter, I think, are the cats happy and alive, or are they dead? That's something to consider as well. Or are the, you know, companion animals, we've domesticated cats and dogs, so I really do have mixed feelings on this, but you're right, the ones in Japan, it just sort of really sound like it's they're using them as an escort service. So just something to think about there and be aware of.
Yeah, it's just a bit odd.
And just to go back to the previous story, I just found out Dr. Olivier Barraville.
Yes,
that was the
None of us could think of his name. We all knew it.
I had his name earlier today, and I didn't write it down. Thank
you. He's awesome.
Yeah, he was amazing. Great speaker. So.
Love him.
Awesome. And then some other news that came out of the States this morning that just came up on my Google alerts was that a St. Louis woman is facing animal cruelty charges after burning her dog.
What?
Yeah. So she set her dog on fire, and then she Facebooked about it.
Why?
To brag about it.
To brag about it. It's horrible. She basically said, I'm on a killer mode, kill dogs today.
So this one's a psychopath.
Yeah, clearly. And so yeah, it's horrible. And basically, there's a group in St. Louis called Mayor Francis Slay's Animal Cruelty Task Force. They began in October, and they've investigated more than 100 cases. So obviously, the police are involved, and I'm hoping I'm going to follow up on this case to see what happens further with this person, because this is just horrible stuff.
That's pretty extreme, but you know, a lot of extreme things happen to animals every day, which is one of the reasons I choose to live a vegan lifestyle.
Exactly.
One of the people who's actually helping everyone to do that, Victoria Moran, she's already a celebrated author, but her new book, Main Street Vegan, subtitle Everything You Need to Know to Eat Healthfully and Live Compassionately in the Real World, can really help you to transition to a compassionate lifestyle. I've been reading the book myself, and I found the recipes to be very easy to follow, and I really like that the book, it starts out with more easy things that you would already have in your house, and then starts to introduce some more specialty ingredients and recipe styles. So I really appreciated that. And the book is very comprehensive. It covers a lot of different aspects of lifestyle and is great for people transitioning to veganism. And also has some tips and lifestyle elements for those who are already vegan and make animal rights a part of their everyday lives. So I've really enjoyed reading the book so far. It was really nice to get to speak with Victoria. I got to talk to her when I was doing my internship. I had to go on an errand one day to pick something up from her. And then we got to have a chat and record it. So I'd love to share that with you all right now. So welcome to the show today.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about your new book, Main Street Vegan?
Oh, I'm just so grateful that it exists in the world. You know, I've been vegan for nearly 30 years, and actually I wrote a book back in the 80s. It was my college thesis called Compassion, the Ultimate Ethic, and I went to England and Scotland and Ireland to study vegans because there were so few in this country. You just couldn't find them. They were too far apart. And so I think about what life was like in 1985 when that first book came out, and what life is like now when everybody is interested in veganism, whether they want to go all the way or whether they're just kind of veg curious. There's just been such a wonderful response to a book that is introducing this idea in a way that is fun and friendly and compassionate to all concerned.
That's awesome. And so I noticed in addition to your thesis, you've also written several other successful books like Creating a Charmed Life and The Love-Powered Diet. So how is Main Street Vegan different, and what inspired you to write this book specifically?
I really was inspired. You know, sometimes it's literal. I got to an animal rights event and saw video footage, and you know, we've all seen it. But sometimes I think your heart is just a little more open, and you see those images and you're reminded of what is going on, and it just touches a part that's deeper than most. And this particular evening, I was so moved, and I just wanted to be able to give a great big fat donation, but you know, I didn't want to write a $100,000 check that would bounce. So I was talking to kind of my guardian angel in the subway, and just like, what am I supposed to do? I want to help. I want to help so much. And it literally came to me as inspiration. Your next book is supposed to be called Main Street Vegan. It's supposed to be 40 little chapters on every aspect of the lifestyle, and you're supposed to put a recipe after each one because people really like recipes. And it was almost like instructions from the great beyond, and I just said, okay, and called my literary agent the next day and said, you know that book we were going to write? Well, we're not going to write that. We're going to write Main Street Vegan.
I noticed that also your daughter, Dare Moran, she's also credited on the book. So can you tell our listeners what it was like working with your daughter?
So cool. My daughter, Adair, is a lifelong vegan. I was vegetarian when I was pregnant, but when she was an infant, I went vegan. So she's lived this way her whole life, and it was so interesting to work with her on it for a couple of reasons. One was I got the perspective of somebody in her 20s, and the other thing was that I got the perspective of somebody who's not a convert. You know, most of us, we find veganism, we discover it, we want to tell everybody about it. It's sort of like if you convert to a different religion, where if you just grow up in a religion, it's just kind of who you are and what you do. And my daughter is like that about being vegan. It's just so second nature to her. And she also has some skills and some information that I don't have. For example, I don't drink. I mean, it's not that I never, ever have a glass of wine, but generally speaking, I don't drink. But she's an actor, and one of her actor day jobs was bartending. So in the chapter of, you know, do vegans drink? she had that information. She had information about outdoor grilling because she and her husband have a yard in New York City, which is fabulous vegan karma. But they do this outdoor grilling of veggies. I never have. So we were a pretty good team.
And so do you have any advice for our listeners out there who, unlike your daughter, might be just starting out on the vegan path, someone who's transitioning? Are there any mistakes that you encounter often with people, and do you know how they can be overcome?
I think the first thing is to just make it an adventure. I know that if you come to it for the animals, sometimes it's just so overwhelming when you're hit with the amount of cruelty that exists. It's almost paralyzing. But what we can do is be part of the solution. And we can't change everything as individuals, but we can change a lot as individuals. So to just see this as an empowering step. Another thing that I like to tell people is you do this a day at a time. This is how the alcoholics sober up in AA. So it's going to work for being vegan too. People are worried, like, okay, I want to be vegan, but my sister's going to get married in 3 months, and I'm going to go to Argentina next year. What am I going to do? Well, you just be vegan today, and the wedding will take care of itself. Argentina will take care of itself. It's just that this is what you do from the time you get up today till the time you go to bed tonight, and it's renewable. It's also such a wonderful adventure to discover the different kinds of foods. I mean, vegans really eat beautiful food, and that kind of becomes a hobby for a lot of people. People who weren't foodies before discover the pleasures of vegetarian restaurants and cooking. You know, a lot of people are back in the kitchen making food. So to just look at it as a wonderful next step in life. I think of it as like falling in love. You know, you meet somebody and this person seems like the perfect person. Well, you've just met veganism. You just met compassionate living. And guess what? You guys are soulmates.
They look pretty good too. Do you have any tips for the other side of things? Exactly. Vegans who are wanting to reach out and spread a compassionate message to non-vegans, how do you spread the word to people?
Yeah, I think the first thing is to just be attractive for the movement. And I'm not talking about looking like the cover of a fashion magazine, but really being the sort of person who, because of your health and vitality, because of your commitment, and because of your general radiating of compassion. I know that sounds a little bit woo-woo, but you can really feel drawn to people who are committed to something, who are really coming from a loving place in life. And I know there are a lot of angry vegans, and certainly there's plenty to be angry about, but I think if you can do this work to the best of your ability, have some fun too, and really be healthy. You know, we have all these wonderful vegan convenience foods now, and we can eat pizza and marshmallows and donuts, and that's great. But we don't want to eat so much pizza and so many marshmallows and so many donuts that we lose that edge of having this healthy glow that is really going to draw people to being vegan. And I think the third thing I would say, the final thing I would say, is use your own particular skills. Who are you? What do you have to offer that maybe somebody else doesn't? Maybe you're good at speaking. Maybe you're good at baking. You know, you want to use these things. And just look at your life and see where you are in your life and what you have that might draw somebody else to this. So for example, in my case, I used to be really overweight, and I've maintained a weight loss of over 60 pounds for almost this 30 years that I've been vegan. That's really unusual. Most people that lose weight gain it back, and maybe they'll lose it again. So to be able to say, yeah, as a vegan who doesn't diet, who eats a lot of great food, I've been able to maintain this weight loss. That's appealing to a lot of people. I'm 63 years old, and most people find that really surprising.
Oh,
that's the response I get from most people. So generally speaking, you know, I have an ego like everybody else, and I know that I live in a culture that celebrates youth, and part of me doesn't want to tell people I'm 63 years old, but another part of me knows that it's a great vegan attractive quality to be able to say, okay, I'm vegan. I eat differently from most people, and I look differently than most people my age, and I feel better, and I don't take prescription drugs. So whatever is going on in your life that makes you unique, then that's the kind of ambassador that you can be.
And on the flip side of things, what's been the biggest challenge for you as an animal advocate?
I think the biggest challenge is probably the frustration with people whom I think ought to get it. There are some people that you just figure, you know what, this person is never going to understand the animal piece. Maybe you're talking to somebody who's a hunter and a trapper. You just think, okay, maybe in this case it's going to have to be his kids that we go for. He's never going to get the message, although sometimes somebody like that does. But what frustrates me is somebody who's a human rights advocate, an environmentalist, somebody who goes to Africa to volunteer, but they don't get the animal piece. So yeah, that one's tough. I just sometimes feel like I wish there was a way to open up people's brains and find that little part that could be compassionate for non-human animals and just plant the seed right in there directly. But since we can't do that, I guess we keep doing the things that we're doing now.
And how do you deal with that when you encounter people that might be really great advocates for human rights or the environment but haven't come around to veganism yet?
I just pretend that they have. When I'm with them, I just say, oh, let's go to this great vegan restaurant. Or, oh my gosh, look at those shoes. Let's find out if they're vegan. They're really cute. I just bring them along assuming that they're vegan, even though I know they're not. But there's something about acting as if. There's great power. For example, we're here in New York City, and practically every waiter is an actor. If you meet that person on the street and say, what do you do? If he says, I'm a waiter, he's probably not going to make it as an actor because he sees himself as a waiter. But if he says, I'm an actor, then he's probably going to make it as an actor. So I just want to just see everybody in the world, if they're not a vegan today, they're a pregan. And that means they're pretty close.
I like that approach very much. So what's next for you and the Main Street Vegan Project? I noticed that you've got a feature film, Miss Liberty, in there.
Oh, there's so much going on with Main Street Vegan. I'm just so grateful for the name. You know, I almost had to give the name up. My publisher didn't like Main Street. They said it sounds like the Tea Party. But when you get into this kind of work, I really believe that sometimes life and the universe just shows up to be helpful. I was actually walking up Broadway, ran into Michael Moore.
What?
Yes, I
did. The filmmaker?
The filmmaker.
Oh, goodness.
And he'd read one of my earlier books and liked it. So we started chatting, and then we ended up chatting quite a bit because he was just getting into changing his diet. When I told him that my publisher didn't like the name, he said, it's a great name, let me talk to them. So we had this three-way call with my editor and Michael Moore and me, and he convinced them that it's a great title. Once the book was Main Street Vegan, then all these other things started opening up. So there is the Main Street Vegan radio broadcast and podcast, which is on unity.fm on Wednesdays, noon Pacific time, 3 Eastern time, and then it's also podcasted on iTunes and Stitcher and all around. So that's really wonderful. Then we have Main Street Vegan Academy, which is just my baby, and I'm so excited about the Academy. This is a 6-day intensive in-person training program to train and certify vegan lifestyle coaches. We meet in New York City. We have fabulous instructors. Then we take fabulous field trips in New York City. And then you asked about Main Street Vegan Productions. We are in pre-production with our first feature film that was co-written by my husband, William Melton, and myself. And Miss Liberty is the story of a cow who escapes from a slaughterhouse. And it's a composite. This is fictional. This is a wonderful family movie. It's not animated. It's an actual movie with people in it. Gene Bauer of Farm Sanctuary is our co-executive producer. And right now, we're talking with actors for the lead roles. And when we have a couple of great name actors, then we can go out for the funding. And hopefully, in a couple of years, Miss Liberty will be playing at a theater near you. It's just such a grace and such a blessing to be part of this movement and know that there are people like you and people like Nathan Runkel and Eddie Garza in the world who are so committed and so dedicated And that means that I don't feel like, oh my gosh, I have to do more, I have to do everything, I have to do a lot. No, I have to do what I can do well, because there are plenty of people involved in this, and together we're going to change the world for animals.
Wow, that was an excellent interview, and I wanted to say that I just really enjoyed meeting Victoria as a person at the Animal Rights Conference. We had a good chat there, and I attended one of her talks as well. She's just really great, and what I really wanted to do is give a shout-out again for her show. It's called Main Street Vegan. It's a radio broadcast that's on Unity FM. You can get it on your computer, so you can just like Google Unity FM. The website will come up, and then look for Main Street Vegan, and it's just a wonderful podcast. I've discovered it recently. And I'm listening to them all now, and it's just a real pleasure to listen to a fellow radio broadcaster for animal rights and veganism.
Also, to celebrate Victoria Moran, we're giving away a copy of her book, Main Street Vegan. So tune in right now to find out how you can win. Are you listening? Write this down. We're going to post the podcast version of today's show on our Facebook page. If you like that post, then you'll be entered to win the book. Now, that being said, you need to be able to pick the book up in Vancouver or possibly connect with me on one of my adventures so I can give it to you. But you have to like that post, and then you will be entered to win a free copy of Main Street Vegan to find out everything you need to know to live compassionately.
Awesome. You've been listening to Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Please join us on next week's show, that's August 2nd, where we'll be talking with Karen O of the Toronto Pig Save about their vigils to bearing witness to the pigs on the way to the slaughter, and also Soraya Thurston of Humane Society International on conditions for farm pigs and the new codes of practice to be implemented in Canada soon. We here at Animal Voices show modestly ask you to keep connected with us via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, or you can join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments on the show, either via Facebook, Twitter, or radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
We're closing the show with a song called Greenpoint by Jason Anderson off his 2011 digital album Summer Style, which you can download online. I had the pleasure of hearing Jason live right before the end of my trip, and it was the most unique and heartfelt concert I've ever attended. After the show, Jason played an hour-long encore outside for a group of listeners, including me, and you can really hear his passion and his lyrics in his voice. I've never wanted to cry and laugh and dance and sing as much as I did that night, so I'm really excited to share this song with you. It's like he touches my soul with his sound. So he's vegan, and I think he really sums up what it's like to be vegan in his song when he says, I want to know that I tried. So let's listen to it right now.
And stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Best view of the city is over the Pulaski, straddling Greenpoint and LIC, the septic tank banks, Newton Creek. I live on Lorimer Street, Bedford. I've never had much way with me. Find me on the chair in the back at Pete's. I'll be singing for you if you're singing for me. Let's do a song for a Thursday night. A sweet one for never quite getting it right, but getting it just close enough to like the way a moment feels so real. Cause tonight our number is coming up flat. Why tonight? There's no looking forward, no looking back. Make it up as you go. Believe in your friends and believe in yourself. And believe that this insignificance has nothing to say about our small significance. I wanna know that I tried. I wanna know that I tried. Oh! Baby! Mostly freaked out by outer space. Scared to death of the death that nobody escapes. You wait for the sinner and wait for the saint, and it don't care about the money you make or you save, and it don't even care how to quote unquote know for evil words. Over and over, no one reward, no punishment, no devil's hell bound, no angels heaven sent. And in our so accepting this, why choose nihilism or being a dick? For whatever time it's our time to exist. And I don't know about you, but I love this. I love this, I love this, I love this. But some night my number is coming up black tonight.